need to be afraid, my friends. No monsters here. Gideon Hamilton, Mark Rogers, Dusty Dvorak on vacation. Matt Ravis along for the ride as well today. We've got a bunch of stuff to get to, and we got a bunch of people here to help make us a little bit smarter. Andrew Schleck from The Athletic down to Dunk will be along here in just about 10 minutes or so to talk about the Thunder's next move and his opinion on the moves that they've made already. Cameron Jordan's going to be here at 1 o'clock to talk about the games that are happening in high school sports in the state of Oklahoma. And then Chris Lovell's going to join us in our 2 o'clock hour to talk about the beginning of college basketball. He's the Texas Tech sideline reporter, also does some work with the basketball crew there as the analyst for Texas Tech's radio network. They've got their first game coming up this evening, and also he'll give us a read on what's going to go on with the Red Raiders and Oklahoma State this weekend when Texas Tech comes to Stillwater. Cowboys trying to keep their slim hopes for a Big 12 championship title game berth alive. So I think it was right when I said that I'm surprised that the Baltimore-Pittsburgh game is still happening this week that the tweet comes out that the game has been postponed. It's been pushed back to Sunday, so it's not like they're going to play it later in the season, but they're going to try to give it another go on Sunday. Baltimore, with several positive COVID tests, had to close down the team facility, which on a Thursday I thought was I honestly thought it was too tall of an ask, but you know, it was up until, what, just a little over 24 hours away from game time that they make the final decision, but it's the right one, honestly.
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
You wanted them to go ahead and play?
No, absolutely not. Okay, no, I think that's probably right. You can't. That's a tall ask for sure. I feel bad for the Steelers. They've already had to move their schedule around because of this earlier in the year against the Titans. Now they get their mini bye week taken away, meaning the you know, you go from playing Thursday to next Sunday. Now you just get your regular schedule in. It's a big win for Netflix on Thursday night, Gideon, because there's no Egg Bowl. There's no no big NFL game. I don't know what there's going to be on TV.
Yeah, a lot of naps being taken during that time.
Sure, the tryptophan.
Although those might start a little bit earlier based on the other two games that that are on. So Sunday afternoon is when those two teams are going to lock it up again. We've got college basketball coming up later today. We've got OU at 7 against Texas San Antonio, and we've got OSU playing at Texas Arlington. So my theory of why you never saw those two teams in the same place before is kind of gone by the wayside because they are two different teams. But
I like that conspiracy theory.
But I get the two confused all the time. But it'll be OSU's going to draw a lot of the media oxygen around here. So your thoughts on OU getting things started? Because I think they'll be an interesting and pretty fun team to watch this year.
I think they will be. I will say this before I talk about OU. I'm far more excited to see Cade Cunningham play basketball. Right. I think that tells you a lot about what kind of product he is, that most people are going to be paying attention to the game that's at 3 p.m. during the game or during the day. But that's absolutely right. But no, any Lon Kruger team is going to be well coached, and not a lot that you're going to be able to tell against this caliber of opponent. But I'm just glad we're getting going, because you can't take any of these games for granted this year. Get in. Well, yep. We talked about this yesterday. It's going to be probably a rocky road.
As you mentioned, Oklahoma State, 3 o'clock. It'll be on ESPN2, so you can watch this game, watch a lot of these really talented kids debut. And not only Cunningham, but got a great player from Canada coming in. Donovan Williams, Mr. Basketball in the state of Nebraska. So there's a lot of other young talent. It's the number 4 recruiting class in the entire country, and a lot of that's because of Cade, but a lot of that is because they really did bring in some other nice pieces that if Cade leaves, those guys are able to stick around, then I think Oklahoma State is going to have some success. Recently, you heard me talk about this. Please, for 1 second, take the jocularity and humor out of this, okay?
Okay. Okay.
Do you think you can manage that for about 20 seconds here?
No smile to be on my face at all.
To be
no
serious
smile.
With me?
Straight face.
If Oklahoma State bursts on the scene and this guy's on, you know, Sports Center every time that they play, can that factor into the NCAA reversing? I don't think it can. Can it?
That's a great question, Gideon. I know exactly what you're implying, which is that that would be great ratings for March Madness.
And these guys made a great point, Matt and Craig, earlier today, that the thing that happened with Alabama probably makes a better case for Oklahoma State because it was a similar infraction with a much different penalty, and that argument probably has a better one. But I just wondered if I was so naive to think that if Oklahoma State was a hot property, maybe they go 500 this year and nobody cares and guys get hurt or something like that, but if they were a hot property, that the NCAA would be like, well, maybe we need this team in the tournament.
It's still very much up in the air. There's been nothing set in stone, and probably for a reason. I would have a hard time in the infraction too. You talk about this. I mean, it's very minor, Gideon, in the grand scheme of things. You had an assistant coach who's not even there anymore, except a cash payment. It was very minor. Has nothing to do with anybody who was there right now. So you take that into consideration too. I'm not ruling it out.
Okay. So 3 o'clock, later today, ESPN2 for OSU.
So excited to see him, man. Jumbo guard. That's how I would describe
6'8", 220, 7'2" wingspan. And, I'm excited to see how it translates to the college game at least. Diego Maradona, we have more soccer fans that listen than people realize. But this is one of the titanic sports figures of the 20th century. I mean, we're talking about all sports, worldwide recognition, and appreciated both for his technical skill, flair for the game. I mean, this guy had it all, some incredible moments, 86 World Cup. He's a guy that is synonymous with the game of soccer.
Argentina is going into a three-day mourning period. Like, they're shutting everything down to mourn the death of this guy. Yep. I mean, that's a whole country that's just shutting down. That tells you everything. And Italy, too. I know he's big over there. It's just crazy. He partied hard, too. He lived very full... He's only 60, which is kind of hard to believe because he looked a little bit older than that. Like I said, he lived a very, very full life and had a lot of health issues.
He got the most or the least out of those 60 years, depending on what you were looking at. But he was having fun for a few of them, especially after he had just got done, and maybe even before he got done playing. There was a great documentary on Maradona that came out a couple
HBO,
of years ago.
Right?
That I watched that was pretty entertaining. He was something else. So that'll be one of the biggest worldwide stories. Period. Today, certainly it will be the biggest worldwide story in sports. College football playoff rankings came out yesterday. I wanted to dive into this a little bit more at 12:40 with you when we have a little bit more time. But first of all, just for local interest here, we'll talk about some of the more intriguing things with the rankings, which are subject to change, of course. But what'd you think about Oklahoma being at 11? There was a lock that they were going to be ahead of Iowa State, even though the teams have the same record and Iowa State beat them. But high enough to where if a disaster happens, they can at least make things interesting. There can at least be a conversation that is had late in the season, despite the fact that it is still, I think, about an 89-degree uphill climb.
It's got to be tough. A lot of stuff is going to happen that's not in their control whatsoever. I will say this, the rankings this early in the year, it's a conversation piece, right? It's good for us to talk about, but these things have a way of taking care of themselves. Let's see what happens with Northwestern and Cincinnati, who are both ahead of Oklahoma. Right there. So let's see what happens. These things have a way of working themselves out.
The problem for OU here is that asking, Florida's going to play Alabama. Florida beats Alabama, then that's a totally moot point, and there's going to be a lot of teams that are bounced then.
Right.
But if Florida loses for a second time, probably at the wrong time, Oklahoma might pass them. I think it still might be a discussion based on who Florida would have lost to then, a Texas A&M team that's right on the cusp, if not in the top four, and an Alabama team that's obviously the top team in the country. I would still think you would have to have Florida ahead of OU unless they're thoroughly embarrassed there. And then you've got Georgia already at two losses that's not playing anybody the rest of the season. There's just too many teams that I think are going to skate by undefeated the rest of the year that are already ahead of OU. I don't mean undefeated for the entire season. I mean undefeated for the rest of their two or three games without having to play in a in a conference championship game. So I think a little bit too high of a hill to climb, but the fact that they were ranked as high as they were certainly piqued the interest of several Sooner fans out there. And we'll talk about BYU, Cincinnati a little bit later on, some of the other Power 5 teams, and some other teams that might be poised to make a big leap in coming weeks if they can play well, like Oregon down at 15, for instance, teams like that. So we'll get to all that and a lot more. Your thoughts before we talk to Andrew here about Oklahoma City and still potentially maneuvering. I'm one of those people that look at the trade exception and think, wow, what could you get there for that when teams, you know, for the most part, tend to want to stay away from those unless it's just the right time for them, the right spot. But this Steven Adams just gargantuan trade exception that they have created, the largest in the history of the league. Do you think that they could maybe assume Nicholas Batum, who has a horrible contract with Charlotte, probably wouldn't play much here, might even be waived or whatever, but could bring him over? That's about what he would be making this season, and get a first-round pick for their trouble.
Is there any way we could just take that trade exception and hang it up in Springfield, like in the Hall of Fame there? I think that would be ideally what you could do, because that's NBA history right there. That would make a lot of sense, for sure. Sam Presti, man, just working every possible angle to continue to extract these first-round picks. In those trade exceptions, you're right. Probably won't be used, but it does give you a little bit of flexibility going forward.
Yeah, if Cade Cunningham comes out today, you know, 24-7-5 and four dunks, then people around here are already going to be
I've already had people in my mentions this morning, Gideon, talking about Cade Cunningham to Oklahoma City. So it's already started.
It'll be a different animal for sure if he's able to come out and light it up today and early in the season throughout the year. I think there'd be a lot of OKC fans. They've always liked the local flavor. They wanted Blake Griffin to come here. You know, they want these local guys to play in front of their hometown crowd so they can support him. Coming up next, we'll talk a little bit more basketball with Andrew Schlecht. We've got a lot of football talk a little bit later in the show, so be sure to stay tuned. Gideon Hamilton in for Mark and Dusty today. This is the Monsters of the Midday. You're listening on 98.1 FM. WWLS, the sports animal.
Score for a Ford.
Happy Thanksgiving week holiday to everybody out there. Andrew Schleck soon to join us from The Athletic and Down to Dunk. We'll talk some Thunder basketball, some NBA with him. In case you missed it, this came out just a few minutes ago. Baltimore and Pittsburgh, which was set to be the night game on Thanksgiving night, NBC, that game has been postponed to Sunday afternoon. Baltimore had all kinds of COVID things happening, actually had to close their team facility, so this makes sense. So it'll just be a Detroit and Dallas Thanksgiving as we all were accustomed to growing up. Okay, let's go ahead and bring in our guest right now. At this time, Andrew Schlecht does a fantastic job covering the Oklahoma City Thunder for Down to Dunk, the NBA at large with The Athletic. Andrew, thanks so much for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
You bet, man. I wanted to use this analogy to start. Sometimes when bad things happen or are said and done, maybe it's the head of a group or political party gets blamed. Like, they didn't actually do this, but they're responsible. They created an environment in which it was okay to do this. So when you post a video of Darius Baisley shooting perimeter shots and the first comment is someone saying Giannis with a jumper, I know you didn't say that, but I also know that you created an environment where someone felt safe saying that. And I just wondered if you wanted to take responsibility.
I claim no responsibility. I actually don't even remember any of this. So I'm not sure what you're talking about.
But I wouldn't have been surprised to hear it was maybe a statement that was made on another account on your behalf. With your interaction with fans here during the off season, does most everybody get it? I know the Adams things hurt and the fact that all of this stuff happened within the span of a week is kind of shocking, but is everybody not hanging on the edge of the tank ready for the ride, but does everybody sort of get it here?
Yeah. I mean, I am actually a little bit pleasantly surprised to the reaction to all this. Most people seem to be on board. Most people seem to understand where this team was heading. And there were certainly people during the season that were hanging on, like, no, look at this. Look, we could add another piece and do this. And then when Sam trades your entire team in the course of 6 days, it's kind of hard to hang on to any of that hope. So I think, yeah, I think people understand. And then also, it sure helps that we have Cade Cunningham in our state, doesn't it? To kind of lure people that direction. Because I think, you know, we'll get to watch him this afternoon, but I think that certainly also helps as well to at least envision what could be coming.
No, that's a good point to get some of the stragglers on board. You're not trying to win this season. We know one of the things that you can control or come close to it anyway during a rebuild is try to get yourself a high enough percentage to get a high draft pick. So you're not necessarily trying to win, but any of these deals on the return where you thought, but I mean, for the most part, they've looked pretty good, but were there more, some more than others where you thought, I thought they could get a little bit more there?
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely look at the Schroeder deal and think, okay, 20th pick in the draft, but if you look at that one, you can see that without that trade, they don't get Pokuševski
right.
Last Wednesday, and so that one is less that way. I think you can look at Oubre and say, okay, one, you save your ownership a lot of money in that kind of deal, and also make yourself a team that's well below the salary cap, which could be helpful in potential deals. But still, like, this pick with the Clay Thompson news could end up not conveying. You could end up with 2 second-rounders for Kelly Oubre, which is pretty underwhelming. But overall, I don't know that you can be really mad about that. Sam has done an outstanding job overall.
Andrew Schlecht is our guest. You search Down to Dunk and find a lot of his takes on basketball. So does a great job for The Athletic. Now, we know trade exceptions, these can't be combined into, you know, this super deal, but which is a shame for me because I'd love to see some kind of monstrous trade exception amalgam. But what could you feasibly do with them, the ones that Oklahoma City has? We're reading a lot about, hey, Batum's deal is $27 million. Maybe use the exception, bring him in, and make somebody give you a first-round pick for your trouble. But you've got another one that's, I think, in the mid-teens. Can you eventually get a star? Can you get a couple of smaller parts of the foundation? Because you've got some really, really big ones comparable to the history of the league since we started using these.
Yeah, I think how I would think about these is not which players can we acquire. It's more of what assets can we acquire with some giant contracts that don't make sense for another team. So, like, that's where the Nick Batum contract makes sense for OKC is. So what's happening right now with the Charlotte Hornets is that they've agreed to a deal with Gordon Hayward, but they don't have the cap space to sign him. So they have to do something in order to clear about $6 million in cap space. Well, one way they could do that is by taking Nick Batum's contract, essentially cutting him. They do what's called a waive and stretch. And so they would pay Nick Batum $27 million over the course of 3 years. And so that's a new provision that was put in the NBA a couple years ago. So they could do that, but it's really just you're paying Nick Batum $27 million to go away.
Yeah.
Now, the Thunder could swoop in and say to Michael Jordan, who's one of the only owners in the league that owns the team by itself, and say, hey, we could save you that money. They could trade them Trevor Ariza. They could trade them Darius Miller. They could bring Batum to OKC, absorb him into the trade exception, and only have to send out whatever, I think $12 million of Trevor Ariza, or even just a few million of Darius Miller. And so it would be beneficial to the Hornets and for the Thunder's trouble, you say, hey, give us a first round pick. Ideally you would get next year's first round pick from Charlotte in the 21 draft, which is going to be a very good draft. But really any Charlotte pick is good. And so if you can just even you can just tell them, and the Thunder have done this a lot, we say, hey, just kick the can down as far as you'd like. 2024, 2025, we'll take whatever, make sure it's top four protected, and you got a deal. And now Charlotte's very short-sighted, and so you may get them to do that. And that trade, I mean, that could end up being a lottery pick when Thunder are good.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the kind of deal that I think the Thunder will look to make rather than acquiring a player that's going to help them. Even in the next couple of years.
Gotcha. We've got Andrew Schlecht from Down to Dunk here for a couple more minutes. Even the guests with other sports that we've had on this week are like, hey, can you believe the Hayward deal? You just brought up the name of Michael Jordan, and I didn't think about the Wings poster for the first time. I just thought about this colossal ineptitude. What I mean, if anybody can find a grain of something positive here, it would be you, somebody that looks at everything from all angles. I talked with Eric yesterday, and he said, you know, it's really hard to bring star caliber players to smaller markets. So that's one thing. And then he, you know, went on to trash him for a couple of minutes. But I mean, do you know what was the thought process here with the Hayward deal as long, how much as it was?
I think it's one of the dumbest things that's happened in a long time in the NBA. I mean, I don't even know that there's a real silver lining here. One, you can't sell tickets right now. So, What are you trying to be good for? And also, there's seven really good teams in the Eastern Conference. Everyone wants to talk, oh, it's the Eastern Conference, they suck anyways.
Right.
There's seven teams. There's one spot. Like, what are we doing here? You just drafted LaMelo Ball, who's maybe one of the more exciting players that you've had in your city in a long time. And then you have one of the best drafts upcoming in 2021. You're pulling the plug now so that you can pick 12th next year? I mean, I think it's just a huge miss by the Hornets. And it's them doing the same stuff they've always done. You know, they traded a draft pick to get Nick Batum. They're always perpetually trying to get to the eighth seed.
Yeah.
And that is a place where you just never want to be there. I mean, they have traded away tons of picks. I mean, they traded away the draft pick that became Damian Lillard. They have just screwed themselves over year after year after year. And this is it's just another one of those things for them. And so maybe they make the eighth seed. Cool. It's just not doing anything for your city, for your franchise. If they got to like the number three pick in next year's draft to pair with LaMelo, now that's exciting. Now you can see a future for them. Well, all they really did was just destroy part of what could be the future of their team. I mean, even if LaMelo's great, one player isn't going to do it. I mean, Anthony Davis couldn't do it for New Orleans. Karl Anthony Towns, who is a great player, can't do it for Minnesota. You have to have multiple stars in order to build up these smaller markets.
Was there anything, it can be high profile, it can be, you know, Trez with the Lakers, Gasol, or under the radar, Ravis was, you know, excited with the Covington move and some of the things that Portland did. Anything high profile or under the radar that's really moved you either in free agency or the draft?
Yeah, I really like what Portland did. I'm with Ravens on, like, Covington really helps them. He fills a need for them that they needed to fill this past year. And then, really, I mean, it's just the rich get richer kind of thing. I mean, the Lakers became a better team. I think that the Clippers, even though they lose Harrell, I think adding Ibaka is very helpful to them. It makes them a lot different than they were last year, and they still have some moves to make as well. So I like that. But really, I mean, the top of the NBA is about the same. And then, you know, I expect to kind of see the same people. I mean, I think the Heat still have a chance to get back to the finals. I think the Bucks have a chance to get there. And then I think you have the Lakers and Clippers. And I think we're still all just waiting for Houston to completely implode. So that may be like the biggest needle mover that happens.
Yeah,
for the NBA.
A couple more dominoes could fall there. Certainly, I didn't ask you about Pokuševski, Maladon. What'd you think about draft night overall for Oklahoma City? You knew it was one of my favorite nights in the history of Thunder basketball because they finally moved away from the presumption that Terrence Ferguson might actually, you know, be helpful in some way, shape, or form. But what'd you think about what they ended up doing?
Yeah, I mean, this will be the Thunder's MO over the course of the next several years is see who has the most potential in the draft at their spot, and they will swing for the fences. You know, there's guys, there's safer picks there. Like, you could have gone like Sadiq Bey, who's a really nice player that's probably going to be a good role player. But Pokuševski is super interesting, and he's 7 feet. He can handle and pass like a guard. He's got really great shooting potential. I mean, he's going to be something to behold this year for the Thunder. The Thunder will not win a lot of games, but I think he makes them really intriguing. And he's here. I mean, he's if you follow him on Instagram, he's here. He's downtown right now. And so this guy's going to play. He's the youngest player in the draft. He's got maybe the most potential of anybody in the draft outside of probably Anthony Edwards and LaMelo. So it's an exciting pick. And then Teo Maledon, has been working on my pronunciation on that one. Teo's a really interesting player, too. He's a bigger point guard. He can really pass it. He can hit a standstill three. He can actually hit a sidestep three actually pretty well as well. He's a nice player, and I think he may surprise some people. And the Thunder are, you know, the typical Thunder player is raw athlete, can't shoot, can't dribble. I mean, that's the typical, like, when people think about Thunder draft picks. But
right.
That's not these guys. Both these guys are guys that can shoot, pass, and dribble. And I think that it'll make for an exciting brand of basketball to pair with SGA and Bazley. They won't be good, but I think they could be exciting.
When you said with emphasis that Pokuševski, like, he's here, it sounded like you indicated like he's invaded, like a skinny Godzilla with a fanny pack, you know, taking Bricktown by storm. Now, how many podcasts have you recorded since November 15th? Is it true that we're actually on a podcast right now that you're doing?
Oh, man. I mean, just like Thunder-related podcasts, I think I'm at like 15. Right now. I wish that was a joke. My wife wishes that was a joke.
It's been an exciting time, and it's certainly going to be a new adventure for all of us that cover Oklahoma City Thunder basketball and the NBA. Andrew, we always appreciate your insights, and happy Thanksgiving to you and your family.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving. Thanks, Gideon.
All right, appreciate it. Andrew Select there. You can find him down to dunk some of his NBA takes, and these exceptions, which they do expire after a while, so you have to be careful about how you use them, but you also have to be sort of assertive with what you can get for them when you get them. But what do you think about that Batum deal? I guess it depends on what people, some other teams are offering up, but you know Charlotte would love to get rid of somebody.
Yeah, and I think what Andrew was saying makes sense there. A lot of this right now, what they're trying to do is save the ownership some money, and that makes sense. So I don't know that Batum necessarily makes sense for that, but his deal is only, it's up after this year, correct?
Yes.
His deal is done after this year, so it's off the books after that. And if you can get an extra first rounder out of that, and again, Andrew, what Andrew's saying is absolutely correct. If you can get a short-sighted team like Charlotte to look down the 2024, 2025, all right, that's a long way away. We'll give you that first round pick. There's a great chance that that's going to end up working out for you. So, I could see why that would get the deal done.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting to see how they approach the next couple of weeks, because a lot of their salaries are just tied up in some of these exceptions.
Right.
Keith Smith pointed out that they could be severely under the cap. They could be even under the floor, but with the exceptions, it would take them into the tax. So it's going to be interesting how creative they are to use these.
Absolutely. And one more point on the Batum deal. I wouldn't hate having him here in OKC. I mean, I think you do need some veterans just to at least steer the ship a little bit. I don't know how interested Trevor Ariza is in being here. I don't know how interested George Hill is. And even if they are, those guys can easily be flipped by the trade deadline for more assets. Yeah. I just think you need some veteran presence.
Well, look, I mean, Nicholas Batum's best days are behind him, but when he was at his peak, he's a decent player for Portland. Then he really flourished once he got the ball in his hands a little bit more early in his career with Charlotte, and the guy was, you know, a triple-double caliber type of guy. So he's obviously a well-rounded player, was always viewed as a really good defender. So the guy obviously has some knowledge about how to play the game, and anything that you can impart to some of the younger guys is gonna help them somewhere on down the road. So, you know, you never know. Maybe you won't. Maybe he'll come here. Maybe he won't. But either way, that is a $27 million trade exception. Usually you're like, okay, seven or eight, that's pretty big. That could help us do a deal here. And so $27 million sort of dwarfs a lot of other deals that we've seen in years past. Coming up next, we'll talk a little bit more about the college football rankings. We'll look forward to some of those big college basketball games a little bit later on today, including Oklahoma State on TV. That's coming up here in, just a little over 2 hours on ESPN2, that we'll get to see Mike Boynton and crew there. OU plays later on this evening. They'll take the court at 7 o'clock for their season opener, too. So we'll talk about that, some football, and a lot more. You're listening to the Monsters of the Midday. I'm Gideon Hamilton here on 98.1 FM. WWLS, the sports animal.
Breaking sports news happens here first.
WWLS, the sports animal. Jim Traber coming up here in just a little over an hour. Looking forward to his take on the big stories of the day. Baltimore-Pittsburgh postponed from Thanksgiving night. They will play on Sunday now. OSU basketball set to get started here in just a couple hours. We'll get our first look. Cade Cunningham and crew, 3 o'clock at Texas Arlington, ESPN2. OU host University of Texas San Antonio later on tonight. The big worldwide story, Diego Maradona passes away at the age of 60. Nick Saban tests positive for COVID again. False positive the first time around, or he definitely had it the first time around, and now, you know, we're hearing conversations about how you know, some organizations didn't want you to get tested a few weeks after because it still might show up as a positive. So what likely is the case here, that he never had it or that he has it and still has some of it in him?
I think that the first time was a false positive. This time seems real because I did see where it was reported that he had mild symptoms. Okay. So if I had to guess, that would probably be it.
Of course, it is that time of year where, you know, 80 to 90% of people have mild symptoms of something that's going on. So wish the best for Nick there. Have you seen Nick's insurance company ad, by the way, where
the it's Aflac just one? Yeah.
So strained. Yeah, mm-hmm. So very strained. that one's kind of painful.
Yeah, I always, every time I see that, I'm like, how much did they pay him to do this spot? Obviously had to be a lot because he's giving him his best, or giving them his best shot there.
Big, big money. Okay, so what I wanted to talk with you about right now was the release of the first, for this year, college football playoff rankings, which we found out yesterday, and there was nothing that I was necessarily incensed about. We talked about Oklahoma being number 11 for the time being, Iowa State at 6-2, one loss in the conference there, two spots lower than Oklahoma, and there's some teams, you know, behind OU that could pass them. There's certainly teams ahead of them that looks, for the most part, like they will stay there based on circumstances beyond OU's control. Now, I will say this for the Sooners, if you're going into a game against Miami, Georgia, Northwestern, Cincinnati, for instance, I think OU might be favored by odds makers going into that game. I certainly would think that they would win. I think they'd have a chance against A&M Florida. So OU is playing some of the best football out there, but let's go ahead and leave them by the side here. And I wanted to get your take. The only thing that didn't make sense to me was not that BYU was all the way down at 14, which, you know, your panel at the release, which that's going to set the tone for most people. If they're upset about everything, then everybody knows, okay, we need to be upset about this. This team was robbed where otherwise, you know, might not get a second look. I was surprised, not that BYU was at 14, but there was such a big gap between BYU and Cincinnati. I thought if BYU was at 14, then Cincinnati would have to be right there with them. And I thought if Cincinnati's up there at 7, then BYU would have to be, you know, 9 or 10 or within arm's reach with an undefeated Northwestern, who I don't really think is that good either. What did you think of when you saw BYU down there? Because the same thing can be said for either of those teams, and that they haven't really beaten anyone this year. And by anyone, I mean comparatively to, you know, Power Five schools.
Yeah, BYU not getting a lot of respect, are they? Some people are going to argue about that for sure. But for Cincinnati, it's just how good that they've looked. We know that eye test is going to be, you know, more important than anything this year. So it's that. It's their strength of schedule, too, I would guess. But I was a little bit surprised by the gap between those two teams.
Yeah, I mean, at some times that Cincinnati played, some of the teams they played, those teams were ranked. And then those teams kind of fell off as the season has gone along, or have fallen off. Cincinnati's defense is all world, I know, but BYU's offense is pretty good. It's just, to me, you know, you have a common opponent there with Houston. BYU goes to Houston, wins comfortably. Cincinnati rolls over Houston. So there's not a lot that you can compare with the two teams. And that's why I don't understand why there was such a large gap between the two.
I guess it's just because what is BYU's best win so far? Is that the defining thing here? Because they haven't played anybody. Boise State.
When they played Boise was ranked 21st, and they beat them, you know, by
51
5
to
touchdowns.
17. Yeah.
Cincinnati, their best win. for all intents and purposes, the best team that they played was probably last week, and they barely won. But I mean, Memphis is okay. SMU was ranked at the time because they hadn't played anybody, and they won by a million. Even Army was, you know, ranked when they played them earlier in the year. So it's tough to quantify what those teams mean. Now, is Cincinnati a lot better than Tulsa, for instance? Yes, I think they are, based on some common opponents. Hopefully we'll get a chance to see that game a little bit later in the year. But the same thing is true with Northwestern. If you think Wisconsin is really good, that's fine. I don't think we know. But outside of that, they beat Purdue by a touchdown, they beat Nebraska by one score, and they beat Iowa by one. So, I mean, how good is Northwestern? It's tough to tell, especially in the first college football rankings, especially in this year of all years. But I would think that there would be some commonalities that would keep teams a little bit more closely tethered to each other. So that was the only thing that stood out to me. Thank God that they had A&M ahead of Florida. That was another worrisome spot for me, because I think the coaches had Florida over A&M, and if they played again, maybe Florida would win by 40. But the teams, what you're hoping for in all of these situations is, man, I wonder what would happen if they played each other, you know? You know, this time they actually did, and A&M won, so they should be ahead of them. I don't know who's going to break in there, especially if A&M remains undefeated. I guess they'd have to hope that, would a one-loss Ohio State team still stay in front of them? I guess it depends on if the one loss came to an undefeated Northwestern team, which would, as crazy as it sounds, vault them into the top four. I guess they would have to hope that Clemson lost a second time, right?
I think so. I think so. I think that's right. It's going to be, look, Ohio State is probably going to get the benefit of the doubt, but any Big Ten team, any Pac-12 team is going to be tough just because of when they started.
Alabama loses to Florida. They're both in. Notre Dame loses to Clemson. They're both in still. So there's a lot of movement there. And Ohio State, I don't know if they... I think if Ohio State, even if they went undefeated the rest of the way and lost to Northwestern, I guess Ohio State would be out. There wouldn't be enough spots for them. And Northwestern would have to leapfrog them in, right?
Yeah.
That's not going to happen, by the way. Northwestern will get shredded by Ohio State.
Fun dreaming about. Cincinnati's interesting, really, really quickly back to them, because their game this week got canceled against Temple. They played Tulsa the week after that. That's it for them. So,
they do have a conference title game.
That's right.
They could potentially play Tulsa twice. Who knows?
So they got two more chances to show out to the committee, though.
Yeah, and I don't think Tulsa's going to do it, in all fairness to the Golden Hurricane, which I thought it was great to see them ranked in this first poll at 5-1. And what's weird about this is they now have to kick themselves, because they obviously could have beaten Oklahoma State the first game of the year. Maybe that would have given them too much confidence. Who knows what would have happened if they won the game? Maybe they would have lost a couple because of it later on down the road. But it was fun to see them at 25. But beating Tulsa, if you're Cincinnati, even beating them by 40 is not going to vault you ahead of A&M and Florida, even in the interim. They have to hope that a lot of wild things happen in front of them. And even then, I think some teams that are sort of hovering around, if they could run the table, could vault Cincinnati and get into the Final Four. Not going to happen, though. Too many teams are going to stay where they are. And I know that a lot of people say that every year. I never buy into it, ever. I always think when OU loses, they're going to work their way back in the Final Four. I always think name teams, it's going to work out for them later on in the season. Not this year. There's just not enough games. There's just not enough chances for screwy things to happen. That's my argument every single year for OU getting back in. There's too many games. There's too many things that can happen that will go wrong and will go right for OU. Not this time around for a team like Cincinnati or teams that are kind of in this 6-9 range. There's just not enough chances left. There's not enough good teams that are playing the teams above them. We're going to come back. When we do, Cameron Jordan is going to be nice enough to join us from the Oklahoman. Cameron does a great job covering high school sports. Of course, that's heating up this year. And, it's been a rough year covering high school athletics. Also coming up during this break, Score for a Ford. Be ready by those phones to call in. Matt Ravis is going to tell you here in just about 2 minutes how you could walk away or drive away, I should say, in a brand new Ford F-250 this year. So be ready to provide your score for the Oklahoma-West Virginia game coming up this weekend. Stay tuned during this break. Listen to Matt. He's going to tell you how to win. Gideon Hamilton in for Mark and Dusty. You're listening to the Monsters of the Midday right here on the Sports Animal.
Sports Animal Flash.
Just past 1 o'clock on a Wednesday festive edition of the Monsters of the Midday, 98.1 FM, WWLS, the Sports Animal. I'm Gideon in for the Monsters today. Thanksgiving Eve. Hope you enjoy whatever it is that you are doing tomorrow and have a very happy holiday. Cameron Jordan set to join us here in just a little bit, but joining us right now is Chris, and he is ready to score for a Ford. The game this weekend, Oklahoma and West Virginia, and Chris could be the one driving away in a brand new Ford F-250. Chris, go and give us your score, man. Lay it on us.
All right. I got Oklahoma 48, West Virginia 21.
Okay, 48-21. Have not heard that one yet, so that's a unique score, at least on our show. He's got OU big, Oklahoma big. Chris, we appreciate it. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
All right, 48-21, so a big gap there for the Sooners, who are playing excellent football against West Virginia. Joining us right now, one of our favorites here on this show, Cameron Jordan from the Oklahoman, does a great job covering high school athletics for the Oklahoman. Cam, how are you doing, man?
Doing pretty well. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing great, and I almost hate to say it, but everything's looking okay for this weekend. Somebody has to point it out, and I know you did a little bit earlier, but all games right now, as we are at this stage in the week, look like they're going to go on as scheduled, right?
Yeah, and knock on wood, it stays that way. It'd be pretty awesome. There's supposed to be 44 playoff games this week, and as of right now, there's still 44 scheduled. There has not been any canceled, any postponed, anything like that this week, so that's obviously a really good deal, considering that there's only 4 weeks left of the season. So, yeah, it's hopefully it stays that
sure
way.
How painful has it been? Because, obviously, they couldn't postpone anything, and when some of these teams have had to pull out, it was just straight forfeits in the playoffs. That has to be absolutely devastating.
Yeah, you know, it really stinks for these teams. I think one of the best examples that I saw was, and I wrote a story about this last week, was Sequoia Claremore. They're a school that had lost 21 straight games come into the year, lost their season opener, and then won 7 straight games and were playing for a district title in week 10, mm-hmm. ended up losing that game, heading to the playoffs. They're hosting a home playoff game for the first time in a few years, and then all of a sudden they had to cancel because of COVID. And a team that they would have beaten in the first round is moving on to the second round. And so it's just a super frustrating situation. And the team that actually they were supposed to play in the first round, that Sequoia Claremore was supposed to play in the first round, Morris ended up moving on to the second round. And you kind of find that weird. They'd only won a couple games all year. So
wow.
There have been a couple of weird situations like that as well. But, yeah, you hate it for those kids. You hate it for those coaches. They put so much time and effort into everything only to have a couple days before a game, hey, you guys can't even play. So,
right.
it really does stink.
Cameron Jordan joins us now, covers high school athletics for the Oklahoman, among other things. I am genuinely excited this year about 6A1-2. I haven't been able to say that, at least in both, in previous years, a lot of years together anyway. And one of the stories that's pretty cool is you wrote about this, Midwest City, with their first victory against Booker T. in over 20 years.
Yeah.
That's absolutely amazing. And Midwest City's still alive here, not the favorite in 6A, certainly. But there's a couple of really intriguing matchups this weekend in 6A 1 and 2, aren't there?
Yeah, there really is. I mean, we can start with that Midwest City game. You know, they're taking on Bixby, who they've actually played in the playoffs the last 3 years. And we all know how good Bixby's been
sure.
the last few years. I mean, they've only won 5 of 6 titles, going for 6 of 7 this year, which would just be incredible. And that just kind of goes to show the program that they've built there. And you got to give credit to Warren Montgomery. He keeps getting the best out of his players. He keeps just developing players like crazy too. That's what's incredible. It seems like every year there's a new freshman who's coming up and is ready to play at the varsity level. And that seems asinine, but it's just, it's incredible how well he's able to just continue to develop these kids. But yeah, Midwest City's definitely got a chance in this game. They'll have an uphill climb. I mean, Bixby's only won 34 straight games for a reason. They're pretty darn good. They're one of the country's best teams, let alone here in just in Oklahoma. But I know it's definitely a chance for Midwest City to kind of maybe break some other some bad demons and win that game too. In the other 6A2 semifinal, you have Stillwater and Choctaw, who actually played in the semis last year. The biggest thing for me in that matchup is going to be how Choctaw's defensive line, which is really good, has a couple of kids who are Division I caliber kids. How are they going to be able to handle Stillwater's offensive line and trying to stop Quantrell Walker, who's up to 7,500 rushing yards for his career, which at the 6A level has never been done before. In fact, in 6A, 5A, 4A, he's beaten every other back by like 2,000 yards. it's just kind of crazy to think about how great he's been up there, and it's going to be really sad that we only know he has only a couple games left, but that's kind of the big thing there. Again, I kind of think Stillwater's the favorite. I think we're kind of headed toward a Stillwater-Bixby part three. Okay. In the state title game here next week, but that's a really good one. And then the only other West Side team that's alive is Edmond Santa Fe. They've been the best one all year. They were expected to be really good. They're going up against the Tulsa Union team. Both these teams kind of had similar starts. They both lost a bunch of games early. Santa Fe lost two and has now won nine straight. Tulsa Union lost four in a row to arguably the four best teams in the state and has come back and won six straight. And I think this is a really good matchup. I think it's a really good chance for both teams to get back in the state title game for the first time in a couple years for Tulsa Union and almost two decades for Santa Fe. But I'm really looking forward to that one. I'm going to be up that's going to be a Saturday night at Owosso, and I'll be up there to watch that one. So looking forward to it as well.
Yeah, very cool. Looking forward to your coverage on that game. Some of those are just some really amazing stories across the board here. And you can find something intriguing in every single class. You pointed out just the third round matchups in Class 2A could be, a Final Four. There's just some great games that are coming up here this weekend. Is there anything outside of 6A that really does grab your attention as far as whether it be a championship game or just a playoff matchup that's further on down the road?
I mean, you kind of mentioned it. 2A has a couple of matchups this week that they don't seem like they should be third round matchups. They
right.
seem like they should be semifinals. And one of them is actually a rematch of the state title game last year. It's Vianne against Metro Christian up in Tulsa. And that's going to be a really good game. It's crazy to think that one of those teams is not going to be playing next week because, in my opinion, they're two of the top five teams in the state. I think that they definitely should both be playing and arguably be playing in 2 weeks, but that's just how the bracket fell this year. But I think it's going to be a really good matchup. I'm leaning Vianne. They were my state title pick before the playoffs started, and I still think that that's the case. Obviously, this is going to be a really big test for them, but if they can get by this game, they have a really good shot to get to that state final. And then on the other side of the bracket, you have two local teams, Jones
right.
at Washington. Again, these two teams are arguably two of the top five teams in the state. It's crazy that they're meeting this early. We'll have coverage of that game on Friday, obviously, it being local. And I'm really looking forward to this one. I think Jones is probably a little bit better, a little bit more tested this year. Their district was a bit tougher. But that doesn't mean Washington's not a good team. Washington's only loss came to a Class 4A team, and they've beaten every 2A opponent they've had pretty handily. So they're a little bit banged up, especially at the quarterback position, which obviously you never want that heading into this time of the year. But I think that that's going to be a really fun matchup as well.
Yeah, no question about that. Now, we're excited today. Obviously, you've got OSU and OU playing beginning the season in college basketball, so that means Prep Hoops is right around the corner. With everything that happened during football season and with so many more moving parts and pieces for basketball, just with more opportunities to play, is there any idea how much of a logistical headache this is going to be for a lot of schools around the state, some with better testing resources than others?
I think the biggest thing is going to be it's proven that you can play inside sports with volleyball. Volleyball was wildly successful in the fall. There weren't many shutdowns. There were occasional, you had to contact trace, you have to shut down a team for a couple weeks. I mean, that's going to happen with basketball. You're going to have big time programs, small schools, whatever. You're going to have some programs that have to miss because of contact tracing or because a kid or a coach tests positive. But volleyball provided a blueprint. They were able to play their entire state tournament. They were able to play regionals, they're able to do everything. And there weren't any known transmissions from school to school during matches. They didn't do handshakes. I know you're a little bit closer when you're playing basketball, especially when you're in the post or guarding somebody one-on-one. It's a little bit different than volleyball, but it's been proven that you can play these indoor sports and have success doing it. So I think that these schools are going to have to kind of, the ones who do play volleyball, maybe look at what they did to be so successful. And the other ones maybe just kind of learn as you go on, keeping players separated on the bench. Trying to do your best as you can in practice to make sure you guys are staying apart and staying safe. That way, in case you do have someone who tests positive and you're able to contact trace and only have to sit out a couple players, you're able to do that and keep playing. But it is more tricky than football, but it can be done, and volleyball showed that.
Gotcha. Great insights as always. Cameron Jordan, we appreciate you being generous with your time this afternoon. Enjoy all those games this weekend. We look forward to catching your coverage of all of it.
Yep, thank you very much for having me on.
You bet. Cameron Jordan there from the Oklahoman, and obviously you've covered some high school sports this season. You know how much of a headache, sometimes a nightmare, it has been just to get these games on the field. And I mean, it is an interesting example with volleyball, but you're playing a lot more. Like you said, there's a lot closer contact there. There's going to be, I based on who plays who, I think there's going to be more travel involved here. Depending on what class district you're in, things like that. So you're just going to see a few cancellations every week, and you hope, you know, if you're a kid, that you can go out there and play, do your thing.
Yep, just got to keep your head down and keep moving on. That's kind of got to be your mindset if you're an athlete. And I'm glad I'm not the one who's making the decisions for all of this to go on, because you're in a really tough spot. So it'll be interesting for sure.
You want me to do my Jim and Al impression?
Sure.
Man, Ohio State is really, really good. I tell you who's good, Ohio State. Did you see what they they're up 17-0 right now on Illinois State.
Illinois State.
As college basketball has gotten underway officially.
Yeah, we aren't seeing no fans in the stands there.
Yeah, it's weird, but we'll certainly deal with it. If it means that some of these charts go down a little bit. But yeah, Ohio State ranked number 23 in the country. OSU playing, so we're about an hour and a half away from tip off there on ESPN2, as a lot of teams are playing today. There's a marathon going on. We're going to get to see some of the perceived better teams. Defending national champion Virginia in action right now from 2 years ago, but yeah, defending champion.
That's what I was about to say. I had to think about that one for a second.
Defense is still intact. They are up 42-19.
I've never worried about the defense of Virginia. That's one thing. I worried about them scoring the basketball, sure, but never about their defense.
You know who's good? Virginia. They're up 42-19 on Towson right now. This is a hell of a run for Ohio State. Let's see how big this thing can get. See if this can get up to Lakers Kings in 90 or 91, whatever it was when they started 29-0. It's up to 19-0 with the chance of the 3-point play. So we'll keep you up to speed on that. Coming up next, though, we're going to switch our attention to, we'll talk a little bit of college basketball, but we'll mainly talk about college football this weekend. OSU is hosting Texas Tech, and Chris Lovell is their sideline reporter. He is also the analyst for their basketball team. So we'll get his thoughts on the 14th ranked Red Raiders starting their season at 6 o'clock tonight, and also his thoughts on some of those other teams in the Big 12, including OU and OSU. But we'll talk about his team's hope if Alan Bowman comes back, if they have a shot at giving the Cowboys a tough time this weekend at Boone Pickens Stadium. I'm Gideon Hamilton in for Mark Rogers, Dusty Dvorak, Matt Ravis with me as well. And you're listening to 98.1 FM, WWLS, the sports animal.
Score for a four.
Today, 98.1 FM, WWLS, the sports animal. I'm Gideon Hamilton, and kind enough to join us right now, offer his thoughts on a variety of topics. He is the publisher of Red Raider Sports, co-host of Tech Talk down there, sideline reporter for Texas Tech football, and the color analyst for the men's basketball team, the hardest working man in show business. Chris Lovell is on the show. Chris, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing good, man. Ready for later today. Of course, we got our two state schools in action. Of course, Red Raiders going to take the court for the first time. We're excited to watch those guys get on the court as well. I wanted to start off with football. Obviously, this is Texas Tech's best shot to get to 500 on the season, with Kansas waiting in the wings to win this game. A tall order against an Oklahoma State team that's going to be stinging after that loss to Bedlam. But tell us what Texas Tech has in the tank for this afternoon's game against OSU.
Yeah, I don't know what to, if I'm being honest, I'm not sure what to expect out of the Red Raiders on Saturday in Stillwater. Coming off a bye week, I mean, it's just been a weird situation with the quarterbacks and just the offense in general in Lubbock this year. And so you're not real sure what you're going to get. And ironically, I mean, the defense is what's been keeping them in games, and I think keeping them competitive. Not that it's been just great, but it's clearly been the most, consistent part of their football team. So they don't have any pressure on them or anything like that. But you're right. I mean, this is a game that, if you want to get to 500, you obviously have to get this one, and then obviously have the Jayhawks coming to Lubbock a week from Saturday. So I wish I could tell you what you know, how Alan Bowman was going to play. Because if he plays at his capability, I mean, they could absolutely make things interesting. I mean, obviously, Alan orchestrated a win up there in Stillwater 2 years ago, and the Red Raiders beat Oklahoma State last year. So, you know, but not real sure because it hadn't exactly been consistent at the quarterback mm-hmm. position this season.
I wanted to ask you, the last time we had you on, it was just prior to Texas Tech playing Oklahoma, and I wanted to ask you something about your time down there in Lubbock, and some people, you look retroactively and think, yeah, I always thought this was going to happen. Did you think that Coach Kingsbury was going to be on an NFL sideline as a head coach that soon after Texas Tech? Because, I mean, be quite honest, you know this, the last couple of years, Texas Tech fans weren't necessarily all that happy with what happened. Obviously, the Mahomes era was successful in some regard. But did you, because of his NFL connections, we thought he might be a coach at some point. Did you think it would happen that quickly?
Probably not that quick. No, I mean, I think anybody. No, there's not. You know, I mean, Cliff may have even told you the same thing. Like, yeah. He didn't expect to be. But that is one bright offensive mind, and you know, I think it was a matter of time. He was going to be fine with whatever you know he did after this, whether it be an OC job at the college level or at the pro level or whatever. But I mean, his personality and skill set probably much more suited to the NFL just because all the things that come with a college job, you know, are things that he just, you know, I mean, wasn't really interested in or just doesn't suit, you know, who he is, if that makes sense. He's all about, you know, drawing stuff up and not having just, you know, the recruiting part of it and the donor, you know, just speaking, you know, all that stuff. He's much more kept to himself, and but you're not going to find too many guys that are smarter from a, you know, an offensive standpoint in this day and age than Cliff is.
Our guest right now is Chris Level. Not only is he the sideline reporter for Texas Tech football, but he's also the color analyst for Texas Tech basketball. Now, we do have to pass along something. Jeff Goodman reporting that the Oklahoma game with UTSA, University of Texas San Antonio, has been canceled for later today. So we're excited to see the Sooners get on the court. Won't happen today. And unfortunately, Chris, that's going to be a part of this season. It's going to be a headache and sometimes a nightmare trying to work out the logistics of teams working through the pandemic and traveling and being able to get out there on the court. You might not even know some nights until the layup line that a game's taken place, at least here in the early going.
Yeah, you know, I'm doing some TV stuff tonight for the Red Raiders in Northwestern State, and you're right. I mean, I went to both teams' shoot-arounds this morning, so it appears that there will be a game played in Lubbock tonight at 6 o'clock. But you're right. I mean, I think, you know, I kind of had talked about that on our show out here in the afternoons in Lubbock about a month ago. You started to sense that football was starting to have some trouble.
Yeah.
And there was a little more cancellation. And now it's just become, it's not even a big deal when a game gets postponed or canceled. And football is 13 or 14, 15, whatever, each week it seems like now. But basketball is a whole different animal. And I think it's going to be tough because there's no uniform schedule, whereas mm-hmm. everybody's not, you know, they're playing every other day or, you know, there's just nothing uniform about it. And that's going to be tricky for cancellations, postponements, and all those kinds of things. I'm not real sure how this is going to work, but everybody's worrying about their own situation. But, you know, because one positive, you know, test or whatever can kind of wipe out a team when you factor in all the other stuff that comes with that. So sure. It's going to be very tricky, you know, and I'm curious to see how much traction they can get here in the coming, you know, weeks and everything like that, because heck, man, conference play is about three or four weeks away. And, you know, there was no exhibitions, there was no secret scrimmages and all that stuff. They're just going to throw these guys out there and let's roll, but that's just kind of the way this thing's going to operate.
Well, last question for you, Chris. You talked about conference play, and this is going to be flat out one of the best conferences in the entire country when everything's said and done. Certainly, it's projected there at the beginning of the season with Baylor and Kansas, and Texas Tech's a big part of that conversation, and Texas should be pretty decent. You've got a lot of excitement here in this state with Cade Cunningham and some of the players that are coming into the Oklahoma State program, but this should be a fun conference to watch this year when they do get out on the floor, and Texas Tech Tech is a huge part of that conversation with some of the new pieces that they've been able to bring into what is a really, really solid program, right?
Yeah, Chris is really excited about seeing his guys compete, I think, tonight. They're very athletic. There's a lot of new pieces. I mean, three transfers, you know, on this team, and that's kind of been the way that he tries to recruit really well and then supplements it with these transfers or grad transfers or whatever. And I think the starting lineup tonight will have a couple of transfers in there. But, yeah, he's very excited to watch his guys compete. And I think he's – it's also not lost on him how thankful they are that they're getting to play, too. And he's tried to mention that to his guys. This isn't the biggest Texas Tech team. It may be the deepest, though. There's not a ton of height, if you will, but he goes about it, you know, from a positionless standpoint, and we switch everything on defense and all that. But, yeah, you nailed it. I mean, this is – I'm not sure there's any conference in the country that can match the top, you know, six or seven teams in this league compared to the – top six or seven in any other league. And I think that this, the Big 12, assuming everybody's healthy and playing and all that, that, I mean, that this is just flat out loaded league. And I hope that we get to see them play a full season.
Absolutely. And I look forward to watching those Texas Tech Red Raiders take the court a little bit later on tonight. They'll be on ESPN Plus. And of course, we'll have plenty of opportunities to see them this season. Look, you have more going on than almost anybody right now, but I want to tell you, I know our listeners really appreciate your insight. So thank you very much for being generous with your time. Hope you and your family have a great Thanksgiving.
Hey, back at you, man. You guys have a great week and have a great holiday tomorrow. I appreciate you having me on.
Sounds good. That's Chris Level from the Texas Tech Radio Network, the basketball analyst and also the sideline reporter for the football team, Oklahoma State. What's the line for that game? Do you know? Have guys been talking about that much this year? This week?
Let me look it up real quick.
Yeah. I would assume that is pretty healthy for Oklahoma State, even coming off the waxing of
11.5.
Yeah, I thought it would be close to two scores. And maybe if Bowman plays, they can keep that around then. Do you see a hangover or do you see a bounce back for Oklahoma State? It's more of a feel thing right now. What are you feeling?
I would hope it was a bounce back. Tell you a lot if it is a hangover type of situation. I would hope it's a bounce back.
I'm going to ask a very difficult question, which I don't think, but I know a lot of our listeners, this has probably occurred to them, and I don't blame them because it's part of human nature. So you've got guys that are looking at potential of being a pro prospect, and they've still got a chance to get in the Big 12 championship game, but there's been a little bit of a letdown. There have been injuries and things like that. Do you, as a player, do you worry if you know, some guys are going to kind of throttle back in the last few weeks of the season? This is something that I tell the story all the time. Once I saw the scroll across the screen that Leonard Fournette was not going to play in the bowl game, and basically he was not playing because he wasn't injured. It was to make sure nothing happened to him for the NFL. I thought, oh no, this is going to be bad. This is going to be everywhere coming soon. And I'm not questioning the pride of anybody, but you know, some fans are probably thinking that, oh gosh, these guys in the NFL, I don't know if they're going to go all out these few games as if they would, if they, you know, had won Bedlam and had the inside track to play for a Big 12 championship.
Yeah. I don't know that there are any kind of surefire prospects that can afford to, you know, have that show up on tape where they're just slacking.
Yeah,
I mean, Chuba, you know, what is he going to be, a round 3, round 4 kind of guy in the NFL, I would guess, and he's already had some questions about his motivation. I think Tylan Wallace should be a nice pick as well. But anybody else on that team, I don't know if they can afford to do that. And it obviously highly depends on their motivation, right? Are you are you in it for your team, for your teammates, or are you in it for yourself? Are you making a business decision, so to speak?
Yeah. So we do have one game still to be played, and I guess Scott Sutton tweeted this out about 20 minutes ago. So if anybody knows, he would know that OSU is gonna play at 3:00 ESPN. Now, if people are just joining us here in the last 5 minutes, Jeff Goodman came out within the last half hour and confirmed that Oklahoma and UTSA, that game, which was supposed to take place at Lloyd Noble 7:00 tonight, has been canceled.
And I guess the next one, too, has already been canceled against UCF. So
this is an Oklahoma problem then.
Sounds that way.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. So bad news there. I was looking forward to seeing OU take the court, but we'll have to wait a few days longer for that. I told you Ohio State went on this crazy run at the beginning of the game. What did it get up to? Like, I know there was 19-0, 22-3, and now it's a lot more respectable. It's 31-12 after Illinois State hits a first rounder, so there's really no need to pay attention.
I was trying to figure out, because in every basketball game, there's a guy who tries to tell you what the team is on pace to score. The on pace guy, there's always that guy. I was trying to figure out what it was for Ohio State, and I couldn't do the math because they had already scored too many points.
Now, I have started to gain interest in the Illinois North Carolina A&T game, where Illinois leads 32-5. Now that game I'm more in tune with now. South Carolina's women's team played earlier, and I thought I wrote down the score. I'm actually going to look that up real quick, because early on in women's basketball, you see some crazy spreads.
A little lopsided.
So they beat College of Charleston earlier today, 121-34. So they won by almost 100 points. And
wow.
They were up 32-5 after one. And
Charleston didn't have anybody score in double digits. It's a rough outing for them.
Now the fourth quarter, I think South Carolina kind of took it easy on them, only outscored them 23-10. When in actuality, when you have an opportunity, Dawn Staley, to win by 100, you know.
Go for it. I think you should.
Let me ask you this, and we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about women's basketball. It could be men's basketball. It could be any sport. If they left, you know, some of their rotation players in a few minutes longer, and it was obvious, you know, that they were motivated to win by 100, would that be, first of all, it'd be a big story because it would gain national attention for women's basketball, whether it's bad or good or not. But would it be a negative story for South Carolina, or would it be a positive story that, oh my God, they won by 100 points?
I'm sure you'd have people split both ways, you know, and okay. I'm sure people would feel very strongly about it. I just mentioned a bit ago, I'd like to see that, because you never see a team win by 100. I would like to see that, but I could see how people would consider that poor sportsmanship or whatever.
Yeah, running up the score. Not like their starters were in, but you know, they'd have one.
If you don't want to lose by 100, then don't lose by 100. I mean, it's that simple.
Oh, wow.
By the way, South Carolina scored that many points and only made 4 3-pointers. So just interior domination.
A lot of layups. I don't think the shot chart's going to show a lot of 18 footers there. I think there will be one gigantic circle underneath the rim if we were to look at that. But you will see some big, big spreads early on in both men's and women's basketball. 119-38. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the college football playoff. Have an opportunity to take some of your phone calls as well. 460-9957, 460-WWLS. Love to hear your thoughts on the rankings and whatever you want to get into, OU, OSU football. You want to talk about the NBA, we can get into that as well. I'm Gideon Hamilton, Matt Ravis alongside. You're listening to the Monsters of the Midday, 98.1 FM, WWLS, the sports animal.
W at West Virginia. It's on 98.1 FM. WWLS, the sports animal.
Welcome back. Coming up on 145 on a Wednesday, on the eve of Thanksgiving. Appreciate you spending part of your holiday time with us. Gideon Hamilton in for Mark Rogers and Dusty Dvoracek today. I'll be right back in this chair 11 o'clock on Friday. So we give our friends, coworkers, the day off tomorrow to enjoy with their loved ones. I want to get your thoughts on a few other things. For that, though, we do have some people on hold here. 460-9957, 460-WWLS. You can be a part of the conversation. Dustin is up first. Dustin, we appreciate you hanging on. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I was calling. Y'all were just talking about the basketball scores, and I don't know if y'all remember this, but there was a high school basketball game back in 2005 where Earlsboro had beat Hannah 112-2.
Okay, and I had not remembered that. I grew up about probably 6 miles away from Earlsboro, but. Do you know were they trying, or was it just something that occurred in nature?
They tried. We had actually played against that team 2 years prior, and we beat them 100-31.
Okay.
And we thought that was crazy at the time. And then, yeah, it was a big deal. It made the Oklahoman newspaper and everything. It was, and I think they even talked about it on SportsCenter. But it was incredible.
Gotcha. Thanks for the call, Dustin. We appreciate it, man. Yeah, Willie Stargell was born in Earlsboro, and also when you drive through Earlsboro on your way back to Tecumseh from Seminole or somewhere, cell service is horrible. So your call will at very least go silent or be choppy, and most of the time it'll just drop.
Well, yeah, I hope you're not on the sports animal all the time. When that happens.
So that's just an interesting fact about Earlsboro. Also, Willie Stargell was born there, and I think his mother might have been there for that day, and then, you know, immediately
but
left.
He is
forever enshrined as an Oklahoman. He was on the video that we watched in sixth grade Oklahoma history class of all the famous people that were born here.
Yeah,
wow,
no,
Willie Stargell.
That's like now people try to claim George Kittle. He played, I think, 1 year at Norman High School. They're like, yep, it's an Oklahoman. George Kittle is ours.
Exactly. Okay, so we've got, we've had a bunch of stuff just happen during the show. So Nick Saban tested positive for COVID again, whether he had it the first time or not, because he tested positive, then he took like 16 tests in the next couple of days and was negative on all of them.
Which, not fun, by the way. I don't feel for him having to take all those tests in consecutive days.
Have you taken one yet?
I have got it, yeah. And the lady was like, you might cry. I was like, yeah, whatever. And then by the time that thing was out of my nose, I had tears in my eyes. It was
well,
crazy.
Sure, yeah. Anytime you get slammed in the nose, it's going to bring tears to your eyes. Just a natural reaction.
Sure.
Now you were obviously really emotional about it too, but yes. No, I'm kidding.
I was just so happy to be getting that test.
I want no part of that thing.
Yeah, it's not fun.
Yeah, hopefully they can develop a little bit more of a more definitive test that is not so invasive as that one. But I mean, has he had it twice? I sort of doubt it. Did he have a false positive the first time and now he really has it this time since he is symptomatic? That's a little bit more likely. It's not certain, but he's going to have to quarantine for 10 days unless he gets, 15 negative tests in the meantime, which not quite the same as who were they playing the first time around? Georgia?
Was it Georgia? Was it that game? I'm trying to remember back. So much has happened since then.
Yeah.
I think it may have been Georgia.
It was a big game because people made a big deal that they were fudging the results to get him back out on the field, even though he was going to be in a press box anyway. But that's a big story. The biggest story in the world of sports and one of the biggest worldwide stories, period, today is going to be the death of all-time soccer great Diego Maradona, hand of God, 86, Kobe's idol, if you want to use that to relate to it. Had some comments that were, Maradona's my idol. I love Maradona. When I was young in Italy, I used to always watch it when he played for Napoli, so Naples. The guy's a mega sports icon. When you're talking about all-time popular sports figures in the world, he's going to be close to the very top there. So sad news, but man, Aldo's 60 years. He got the most out of him. I can tell you that. Whether that was for better or worse. Also today, college football rankings released last night. We offered our thoughts on those. The key for State fans, OSU 23, OU all the way up at 11, enough to be intriguing and enough to start looking at some of the games that other teams have left. However, when you do that, it's a little bit depressing if you're an OU fan because you realize how many teams in front of you have, two cream puffs the rest of the way, or there's some combination that leaves them still in a spot ahead of the Sooners. News that happened during this show, we were set for OSU and OU basketball today. OSU taking on Texas Arlington. They're there, by the way. At 3:00 ESPN. So this game's going to start in about an hour. Jim's going to be able to talk about it. Al's going to be able to talk about it later on today. That game is apparently still going to happen. And we get to see Cade Cunningham, Donovan Williams, Boone, all the guys on this year's team.
I'm ready to see the Cade Cunningham effect on the numbers on this game because I guarantee this is going to have a national audience.
Yeah, I think some people will tune in, and a lot of people are off work today, day before Thanksgiving, sure. So that'll they can give it a chance. Now, it is ESPN2 still in the middle of the day, but I bet there's a little bit of buzz for that one. Now, we won't get to see Oklahoma take on UTSA. That was set for 7 o'clock, and you had a little bit more information on that from Jeff Goodman that leads us to believe that this wasn't a UTSA issue.
Yeah, because the next game for OU against UCF, that was scheduled, I think, for Saturday, has also been canceled. So, yeah, mm-hmm. Kind of leads you to believe that it is on OU's side.
Well, and the thing is, the basketball program, like OU would release numbers from within the entire sports division. And for a while, you had like one test with the women's basketball team, and it might have been a trainer, might have been a coach or something like that. And OU had done so well for so long. And now it's just, I mean, this thing has really, really spread after restrictions were lifted, after Sturgis, which, you know, you pointed to at the time and said this is going to be a real problem. And, of course, it was. And as, you know, restrictions got more lax, then obviously, you know, deaths, hospitalizations, and cases have all skyrocketed here in the last couple of months. And we're still at those peaks. Those aren't coming down. And that's going to affect everybody, including the world of sports.
Yeah, and college towns especially seems to be really, really bad, you know, in a lot of different college towns. So just bad news. All you can do is sit back and kind of cross your fingers and hope everybody is fine and also responsible going forward.
Favorite Thanksgiving food, least favorite Thanksgiving food.
Okay, yeah, the least favorite. You always kind of offend some people, and you know,
I hope nobody's listening. Now, there's one person in particular that I could offend, but I don't think he's listening.
Okay,
but he always, for some reason, makes tabbouleh and brings it, and nobody eats it but him.
Not a fan of the bulgur wheat. You don't like that?
It looks disgusting. It smells disgusting. I don't even want to look at it. I don't even want to point at it.
I like tabbouleh, by the way. I like it.
Oh my God, Matt. Matt!
I used to make it at a restaurant I worked at in college, so special memories there. Anyway.
No, I want
to know. That's not traditional Thanksgiving at all, tabbouleh.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me anyway. I have always steered clear of that. My favorite is moist white meat turkey. When turkey is really at its best there, there's nothing that can really beat it. And then chilled pumpkin pie.
Oh, I like
chilled
that.
Pumpkin pie.
Okay, I like that.
Now your take.
Mashed potato is always going to be number one for me. They're the best. And I'm really this
made
is gonna,
specifically by a relative, or you can just get them anywhere. And you're
well,
gonna
I'm not.
Them.
I can't make them as good as my mom. I'll put it that way. Yeah. Mom always makes good mashed potatoes. Another thing that I this may be controversial, especially with what you just said. I think turkey is very average. I really do. It doesn't excite me a whole lot.
Look,
but I don't.
There's
leave
nothing.
It off the plate.
There's nothing worse than dry turkey.
But if
there's moist white meat turkey seasoned well, you know, a little bit of something extra, I just absolutely love turkey. So do you prefer, like, if, you know, there's ham available,
I like
you
ham,
go for
yeah.
the ham?
But I'm not, like I said, I'm not leaving the turkey off my plate. If that's all I got, yeah. I'll eat it. I'm fine
dry,
with that.
Nothing more disappointing in life than dry turkey, because you're all ready for this delicious meat. And then you see it, and you can tell right away.
Yeah.
You can just tell.
One other thing that I know a lot of people like that I really don't very very much like is the canned cranberry sauce. Yeah, I know
no
some people are all about that, and I get it. It's kind of a, I don't know what you say, a delicacy for some people, but I'm not about that.
Yeah. I want no...
Texturally.
No part of it.
Yeah. Not in my life.
No. Okay. So we're not going to be on the air during Thanksgiving Day. So your take on the two football games that everybody will be watching or sleeping through or pretending to watch, whatever the case may be. We're hoping for that game later on that night between Baltimore and Pittsburgh. That one got moved because of the pandemic, and Baltimore, with some positive cases, got moved to Sunday. So instead, we've got Detroit, we've got the Cowboys.
Yeah, that Lions-Texans game actually has a chance to be interesting. Both defenses not all that great. That it also has a chance to be a complete and utter snore fest, as does the second game. Between Washington and Dallas. So I'll be tuning in. No Egg Bowl tomorrow, so that's going to be kind of weird, yep. too. So like I said, Netflix is the big winner for Thanksgiving evening.
At least the Dallas and Washington game has some implications where each fan base can feel they're actually a part of something afterwards, which I guess you could do if Detroit won, but that's still a long shot to me. But the NFC East is so bad that if Dallas wins that game like they should, then Cowboy fans, there's still a chance Philly and, take care of a couple other games that should maybe surprise and win.
There's going to be a team that gets a home playoff game from that division, and it just doesn't feel right.
Amazing. We're going to hand the baton to the Ultimate. Jim Traber is coming up here in just a couple of minutes. A reminder, during Jim's show, he'll be able to give you updates. I'm sure he'll be keeping an eye on what's going on with Oklahoma State in there. Season opener in college basketball, and we're all really excited to see the impact of these new players, including potential high draft pick Cade Cunningham. So Jim is going to be able to tell you all about that. If you got to be on the road a little bit later on, you're doing some early Black Friday stuff, some travel, whatever it is that you're doing safely, Jim will let you know what's going on in that game as well as the rest of the sports world. Big thank you to our guests today, Chris Level from Texas Tech, Andrew Schleck from Down to Dunk, The Athletic, and Cameron Jordan from The Oklahoman. Great job, Matt Ravis, as always, putting and holding everything together for everybody here at the Sports Animal. I'm Gideon Hamilton. Take time this week to let the people you care about know how thankful you are for them, for being a great brother, sister, mom, dad, doctor, teammate, friend, whatever it is. If they mean something to you, let them know. And I think that'll be really, really meaningful to them. I'm thankful for the opportunity to work here with so many great people. Thankful to you guys for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show today and enjoy your Thanksgiving. You've been listening to the Monsters of the Midday on the Sports Animal.
Sports Animal.